This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Welcome to another edition of the Mizzou Sports Podcast. I am Daniel Jones, Mizzou sports writer, and with me today is Cameron Teague Robinson and our new addition to the staff, Peter Baugh, who will be covering Mizzou Olympic sports going forward. Guess what, Peter? It looks like you're going to be a busy guy because there's a lot of news going down on the Olympic sports beat today. We can start with the news of the day, which was that Aaron Earlywine, the coach of Mizzou's softball team since 2007, was fired this morning. Softball season starts in 13 days. There was a statement that was released. Jim Sterk said that he met with Coach Earlywine this morning, Friday morning, and informed him of our decision to make a change in leadership. Sterk says, "We do not take action of this magnitude without careful thought and consideration. However, we have lost confidence in Coach Earlywine's leadership to foster the type of healthy environment we expect for our student athletes, and as a result, believe it is in the program's best interest to make a change at this time." Peter, 13 days before the season starts. This is kind of a head-scratcher, you think?
Yeah, it certainly is an interesting timing, and this is especially because Coach Earlywine has been one of the most successful coaches in Mizzou history. I mean, he's made the NCAA tournament the last 11 years, 8 super regional appearances, and even 3 College World Series appearances. So he certainly has built a legacy here, but he's also been an extremely polarizing figure, and I think that seems to have been what was his demise as head coach.
Right. So you mentioned the success. Mizzou's softball program was not particularly successful before he got there. It had enjoyed a little bit of success, but from what I read, I believe they've made less NCAA tournament appearances in 29 years before Earlywine got there than they have in the 11 years that he's been there. So he's taken the program to a whole new level of success. I think that's evident both in the tournament appearances and in the new softball stadium that was just constructed and finished last year. There's just his presence and his success with that team really created a program, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and took it to another level. And without him, first of all, you have to figure out what you're going to do this season. Mizzou did not say who would be taking over the program in his absence, but then you have to figure out, you know, is the team going to still have the same level of support without him? Are they going to be able to maintain the same level of success? I think there's a lot of things that go into it, but obviously, like you said, Peter, he was a polarizing guy. He was under investigation throughout a lot of the 2016 season, which became a Title IX investigation. A number of players transferred that year after that season was over. He's always had a lot of defenders, both inside and outside the program. How do you try to encapsulate this guy's, not Aaron's personality, both on and off the field?
Well, he certainly seemed like a kind of fiery coach, and definitely there were mixed reactions among players because you saw clearly some discontent, especially in that 2016 season. But then you also saw a lot of players come out and support him. The players publicly played games in protest to show their support for Coach Earlywine. And it's an interest. You talked a little bit about the foundation he's built, and that could end up being what is a saving grace for Mizzou softball going forward, is that they've kind of solidified themselves as this contender at the NCAA level. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. They made the NCAA tournament last year, but they were not as successful as they have been in past years. So there's potentially less talent on the roster this year, and with the coaching situation in flux, it's certainly going to put them in a tough position. But hopefully from Mizzou athletics standpoint, they will be able to kind of build off the foundation they have, the good facilities they have, and yeah, hopefully for them it'll work out.
Now, I think what it comes down to for them now is how many people stay. I mean, you have freshmen who haven't played a game, and now their coach is gone in 13 days before the season. So I mean, now do they transfer now? because if you transfer now, I mean, you can't transfer and play. So that's a whole big thing. A lot of different things. Just, I think you talk about the foundation he's set. I agree. I think he's done a tremendous job with the program as a whole and in general, winning wise specifically. But it just comes down to how many of these people want to stay and not play for Earlywine. Mm-hmm. I mean, because when you come here, I mean, Earlywine is a name you hear. I mean, you talk to some of these recruits who, I mean, before they sign, and Aaron Earlywine is the guy they wanted to play for. So you mentioned the support. So it'll just be really interesting to see what happens to some of the players who throw their support behind Earlywine and what happens to them and what happens to the program because of how many of them are going to transfer.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether or not they can build off the foundation that they already have, or if they'll kind of fall off back into what they were before Earlywine took over.
Right. So here's more from Sterk, who...
Johnny's comments real quick.
Yeah. So it says, the team was young last season. Gino, can you read that last name? Ginny, I think. So Mizzou had probably one of their worst seasons. I think it ended up being its worst ever season under Earlywine last year. They were just a touch above 500, didn't win a regional game. And they were young, but that's partially attributable to all the people that left after the 2016 season. Their two best pitchers transferred out in Tori Finucane and Paige Lowry, so they were kind of dealing with the patchwork pitching staff. They were kind of short on a talent and experience, but that kind of leads me into what I was about to say from Jim Sterk here. He continued in his statement, "While we are appreciative of the many successes Coach Earlywine's teams have enjoyed on the field during his Mizzou tenure, we had serious concerns about the culture within the softball program and the experience our student-athletes were being provided as a result. I recognize that the timing is less than ideal, but I did not believe I could hold off in making a decision to ensure that our student-athletes experience a constructive environment that is consistent with the department's expectations and values." So, he went on to say, it wasn't necessarily one incident, but it was based, the decision to fire him was based on a culmination of leadership concerns. So when you take into consideration all the things that have happened within the softball program, you're looking at players that complained that started the investigation. You're looking at players that have left the program. Earlywine has always had strong support from, you know, different factions of the program inside and outside, but there was just something about him that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and ultimately I think that was probably what won out. I yet to find out the details on what led to his immediate firing. So I think there's a general consensus that the timing makes it pretty conspicuous. Yeah, if it was a pattern of, okay, well, Aaron Earlywine has been uncooperative throughout his career, I don't think you would come to the decision 13 days before the season, we need to get rid of this guy right now. So, but, you know, we're kind of still gathering facts on what's going on. I will say, I think the first inclination on a large scale that of Aaron Earlywine's personality was the email that he sent to Holly Hess from Missouri State. You guys probably remember that. Could you imagine sending an email like that to a fellow colleague in the journalism industry?
Well, we get so many emails from angry people all the time, and I think of them like, how upset do you have to be to send an email, just an angry email to us? Now, as a coach to another coach, like, I don't think I could ever get myself to email another reporter about anything. Like that's nuts to me. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody has ever made me that mad. I hope nobody makes me that mad. I'm not sure. That's nuts to me. I didn't know about that. We were talking about it before the podcast, but that's incredible to me.
Yeah, and it definitely reflects a certain level of temper that Aaron Earlywine possessed.
Right. For those who are unfamiliar with exactly what we're talking about, 2 years ago, Mizzou beat Missouri State, and the coach of Missouri State declined to renew the series or continue the series with Missouri. And so Aaron Earlywine responded to the coach, Holly Hess, with an email, or Hesse maybe, H-E-S-S-E, with an email that said she was scared to get her bleep whooped yet again and that she deserved credit for keeping her job despite being horse bleep for so long.
I think it's funnier when you say horse bleep.
We got to keep it a family podcast, Cam. So we do have another comment from Tramel Rags, one of our featured contributors. Is there any coach on the staff that has head coach experience and could step in right away to lead the team? Peter, do you know?
Well, I was actually just looking at that. Currently, there are two assistant coaches listed on the roster. Early Wine's already been removed. There's Adam Lalonde, who has been with the team for 2 years, but it appears he's been around softball for a little bit. And then Gina Fogue, who's been with the team for, I think, 4 or 5 years. She played at Missouri, and so she's currently she's listed as an assistant coach along with Early Wine. So, or along with the other guy. Ben Earlywine is now off the roster. So those are the two assistant coaches. It doesn't sound like either of them are particularly experienced at least at Missouri, but someone will have to step in. And
it has to be one of those two. I don't think that there's no way you could bring somebody in 13 days to lead a softball program. I wouldn't imagine. I mean, their black and gold game is next Saturday. Yeah, so 8 days. I think somebody within the program has to take the lead for this season. There's just not enough time to get somebody else in here. But knowing what you do about the program, what does this do to your expectations of the season? I mean, they were picked to finish 11th out of 13 in the SEC while he was the coach. Does this change your perspective on what Missouri can do for this year?
I mean, it certainly shows that there's some negative things going on within the program that I can't imagine would help on-field performance. So if anything, it hurts. Unless maybe this relieves a burden from the players, maybe they're not worried anymore. But I think you already are looking at a team that had less talent than years past, and they had one player, Reagan Nash, was named to the All-SEC preseason team. She had a good season last year, but you have to wonder exactly how they're going to perform, especially now that they don't have their coach and probably no super solidified coach to take his place. Yeah. So it'll put them in an interesting spot. They'll have to show some serious resilience, and we'll see if they can do that.
I think Kim brought up a good point too. You don't know what players are going to leave. Imagine some, maybe not the whole team, but some players, I would imagine will leave, will not want to be here if Early One is not here. Not only was he the face of the program, he was the personality of the program. I mean, that softball program became who Aaron Early One is, and it rubbed some people the wrong way, but it was also, I think, for a lot of players, the program that they wanted to be a part of, where they knew they could go there, get coached hard, would have a certain amount of success, and that was why they were there, was because of him. So I imagine that there will be a lot of players, more than a couple, that decide they don't want to be at Missouri without Earlywine there. So how fast that happens may also have an impact on what happens for this season, but all we can do is kind of wait and see and try to get more information as we can. So any other thoughts on the softball program?
No.
Oh.
No. I know, honestly, no. This really just came out of nowhere. I don't want to say nowhere, because obviously Early One has had problems in the past, but it's just, like we said before, the timing is just absolutely nuts. And then the thing becomes, Peter, you mentioned that, like, the distraction of Coach Early One being there. So they're going to have to name an interim coach. I can't imagine they get a new head coach in 13 days. So they're going to have to name an interim coach. There's no way Stark names him the full-time head coach during the season. You're going to have that distraction anyway, either way, whether Early One is still here or whether you have an interim coach. Like you said before, I at least would believe something happened, because you don't do this 13 days before a season unless something happened, unless somebody came to you with another complaint or there were multiple complaints that he hadn't changed. So it's just, the timing is just really nuts.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pass this microphone back to Danny.
So we'll kind of come back to that.
That was a really
probably
awkward
next
transition.
Week. Yeah. Thank you for narrating exactly how that went down. You had the microphone in your hand, and then you decided, I think I've pretty much said all that I needed to say.
No one else said anything, so I was like, I'm going to
take it up. You can have this back.
Yeah.
Okay, so earlier this week. It was a rough week for Mizzou basketball, both for the men and the women. Men lost 91-73 to Auburn at home on Wednesday night. Then the women go on the road to Georgia, lose 62-50 last night. Neither team, you could look at Mizzou, the men's loss to Auburn, as a failure of the defense to allow 91 points. But I think also in that game, it was a fast-moving game, and the offense didn't really get moving very well. For the women, 50 points, lowest amount of points that they put up in a game all season. And it gets a lot tougher from here. You have South Carolina on Sunday and then Mississippi State on Thursday, both top 10 teams and last year's national championship game participants. So the men tomorrow play Mississippi State. What do you see in that matchup?
A lot of defense. I mean, Mississippi State's one of the, I mean, they're not going to score very well. I mean, they shoot legitimately 29% from three, which is nuts to me. But they are one of the better defensive teams in the country in terms of scoring defense, field goal percentage defense, defensive efficiency, block percentage. I was just doing the story now. Like, it's incredible the list of defensive statistics they finished in the top 20 in.
Yeah.
So that's what they're going to do. Missouri struggled offensively the last few games. Texas A&M was their worst game of the season offensively. Although they scored 73 points against Auburn, it wasn't great. 20 turnovers. It was just an up and down game. So they had to at least score 70 just because of how many possessions they had. So it's interesting to see what happens. I think Missouri's in a better spot. I don't think Missouri's defense is as bad as 91 points. They've been really good in SEC play defensively. Mm-hmm. They held Tennessee to 55. Tennessee scored 78 a game. So I think Missouri has the better, I guess, they've had a makeup for this game. I think they can hang in a defensive matchup with Mississippi State. It'll just be, one, can the offense get going? Because they've struggled late. And Mississippi State holds teams to 32% from three. And that's nearly 50% of Missouri's shot attempts come from deep.
Right.
And two, can Mizzou get anything out of its post, guys, this week? I mean, last week it was just awful. Texas A&M, really nothing. Jeremiah Tillman played all right against Texas A&M. And then against Auburn, Jeremiah Tillman hardly touched the floor. Jonte didn't play particularly well. Kevin Perry didn't play particularly well. Reed Nico didn't play well. So, I mean, for Missouri's offense to get going, they really need to get their post guys going just because it opens up so much.
This is going to sound weird because after the Auburn game, you did the game story and I did a story on Jeremiah Tillman. But I was surprised that Jeremiah Tillman was kind of the story in a lot of ways from that Auburn game. Yeah. He only played 7 minutes. He's had his problems with foul trouble this year, obviously. And he's such an amazing talent. I just think it was apparent on Wednesday, and we won't belabor this point because it's been said a lot this week, but when he's not on the floor, Missouri is just a much different team, not for the better.
Yeah.
They need him on the floor as much as possible.
If you believe, which I think a lot of us kind of believe, that Missouri is either an NCAA tournament team or is a bubble NCAA tournament team, without Jeremiah Tillman, they are, without a doubt, an NIT team. They are not very good without Jeremiah Tillman. And it's not to say Jeremiah Tillman is this All-American. Like, he's not a tremendous scorer sometimes. He doesn't rebound a ton sometimes. But it's just his physical presence. He's so strong. He can move people in the paint. Mm-hmm. And it just opens up so much because people have to pay attention. If you're going to single cover him, it's not going to work.
Right.
So you have to pay attention to him, and that just opens up Missouri's offense. Like you said, it was a story of the day because it seemed like all season, like, you're like, Jeremiah's in foul trouble again. But it was just – that Auburn game was particularly bad.
Yeah, yeah,
And it just seemed like everything came to a head.
It happened so fast.
It was the first possession. Auburn just went down.
Yeah, and then his first possession after he set back in.
Right.
And then first 2 minutes of the second half, fouls three and four.
A foul on a three.
Yeah. Apparent.
It was bad. I think, I think everything came to a head at that point. So Akanto was asked after the game if he had ever thought about sitting – Jeremiah not starting him. He did say he's thought about that. I don't know if they do that this week.
He started every game this season so far.
Exactly. So I don't know if that happens against Mississippi State or not, but something has to change.
Going back to Mississippi State real quick. This is a question I have, and maybe some of the audience does too. You wouldn't call them an upper echelon SEC team.
Right.
They were good in non-conference, but they didn't play a very difficult schedule.
Right.
Where would you rank them in terms of like groups of SEC teams? Are they top half? Are they, where would you put them?
I think they're in the bottom third. I mean, looking at probably, they're not the worst team in SEC. You're looking at probably Vandy's there. They're probably in that bottom third with Ole Miss Trying to think of another team off the top of my head. I can't think of another team off the top of my head, but I was just looking at the standings. But I don't know. They're somewhere in that bottom third. I mean, it's just the fact that they don't score well. And they hang their hat on defense, which is going to win you a lot of games. But in the SEC this year, there are a lot of teams who can do multiple different things as well as defend. The SEC is loaded. Within a loaded SEC, I think they're kind of there in that bottom third just because they don't shoot the ball well. Tremendously, I should say. They're pretty good field goal percentage-wise, but from deep, they're not great. I don't know. That's probably where I put it. It's not going to be easy to go there and win, though, right, because winning on the road anywhere is not easy.
In the metropolis that is Starkville.
Exactly.
At the hump. That's what they call it. It's the
upper echelon of SEC towns.
Yeah, exactly. The Humphrey Dome or something. Yeah. The hump. So
it's a game as you should win.
They should.
I would think so.
Okay.
You still got NCAA tournament hopes. This is a win you need.
Yeah. Now they're 3-4, so they're in the bottom. They're, I think, tied for ninth in the SEC. Real quick comment on Tillman before we go to the women's.
Jamal Rags once again. He said, "Do you think that letting Tillman just play until he fouls out would help him out? At this point, he doesn't really help the team. So if he fouls out in the first 6 or 7 minutes, they don't lose much." No, because I think, like, you're talking about, like, Jeremiah, if he's in foul trouble, sure, it doesn't help. But Missouri's not deep. They're not deep enough to play 30 minutes without Jeremiah Tillman. And I think that you saw that against Auburn. I mean, you mentioned it in your story that even in the games he's had foul trouble and he still played about 20 minutes. The Auburn game was just particularly bad because it happened so quick. I don't think Missouri's deep enough to play 30 minutes if Jeremiah Tillman just fouls out in the first 6 minutes. That means you're playing Reed Nico for 30 minutes, and nothing against Reed Nico, but he's just not talented enough to play 30 minutes like that. He's not Jeremiah Tillman. He just doesn't have the presence, and team. You don't have to account for him offensively in the post. You have to kind of. It's a tough thing for that coaching staff. You have to monitor it, but you can't just. I don't think you can just leave him in.
I don't know. Maybe you leave him in until he picks up three. Yeah. And if he does that early, you know, in the first 10 minutes, then you kind of roll the dice. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know how you handle that as a coach. I mean, you kind of have to do the math a little bit. You have to trust that if you leave him in there, that he won't make the mistakes. You know, if you take him out immediately, then, I mean, this is the point that coaches make all the time. That coaches equate fouls to playing time. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
John Calipari did it after the tournament last year, right. Said his best players didn't get to play because they got in foul trouble. Well, they didn't play because you took them off the floor.
Right, exactly.
If you pick up three fouls, you don't automatically have to go to the bench.
Right, the ref is saying go sit down.
Yeah, and that's what Dawn Staley said about Asia Wilson. She said, when does the best player in the country ever play 15 minutes a game? Right. Well, you're the one who took her off the floor.
Right.
But whether or not the fouls are fair or not, you're the one that took her off the floor. So that's that's what Kenza Martin has to wrestle with, is it's his decision to take Jeremiah off the floor. So,
and I think it's just something he has to play through and learn how to do. You have to learn how to not play with fouls. So I think you do kind of have to, like you said, you have to roll the dice a little bit, but just leaving him out there, I don't think it's going to work.
Okay.
Cool.
So we'll touch on the women real quick. Women, as we said, they will go to South Carolina on Sunday. I'm doing a story this week on that, on the environment that's there. South Carolina leads the nation in attendance, so it's already going to be a crazy environment. But I think they felt, especially from my perspective, as you watch social media, as you watch fans react, after talking with somebody from South Carolina, a radio host that's there, he makes a good point, and it shouldn't have to, you know, come from somebody like that. Correct. Social media is not a reflection of the entire fan base.
Agreed.
But I think there was a lot of vitriol after that game, after Missouri beat South Carolina, at the way it happened, and especially after Dawn Staley reacted so strongly in the post-game press conference when she said she felt her best player was wronged. I think that inspires a lot of angst within the fan base, too, when their head coach kind of leads the way and says that. So I believe that this game Sunday will be a cauldron. It will be a crazy atmosphere, especially for a women's basketball game against the top 10 team in the country and maybe the best player in the country in Asia Wilson. Then you go back to Columbia, Missouri on Thursday, and you play Mississippi State, the last team to beat Connecticut, still undefeated, number 2 in the country.
Right.
So didn't get off on a great start on Thursday last night when they went to Georgia, right. Shot less than 30% and lost. But it's a crucial stretch for the women's team. Peter, do you have any thoughts on the women's team and where they're at right now? What's coming up for them in the next couple weeks?
Yeah, well, this three-game stretch, the Georgia game and then South Carolina and Mississippi State, that's a huge, huge stretch against some very quality opponents. And at this point, I think they'd be lucky to win one of those games. I think South Carolina is going to come out ready to play, and their fans are going to be angry because there definitely was a lot of tension after that Missouri game. People were South Carolina fans were frustrated with the way Sophie Cunningham played. She's a somewhat physical player, and they were frustrated by that. So I think it's going to be a hostile environment, and I don't necessarily expect Mizzou to win. They definitely could. They have the talent to. But it's not – I think it's going to be tough for them to win one of these next two games. They're still in a very good position to have a decently high seed in, mm-hmm. In the NCAA tournament. But to get one of those top four seeds, they need – I think a win in one of the next two games would be huge.
Yeah, 100% agree. And we should say Georgia is ranked – number 21,
right?
And right now they're sitting in sole possession of second place in the SEC. So they're a really good team that was playing on their home floor. They presented a difficult challenge. Or shouldn't look at that like, wow, you know, what a terrible way. Right. I mean, the reason it's a tough three-game stretch is because that game at Georgia was so difficult.
Right. And to Peter's point about like the – both of you guys' point, I guess, about how crazy the crowd's going to be in South Carolina, I think the thing about this Missouri women's basketball team, and both of you guys know this, and I think people who are listening to this know this, the pulse begins with Sophie. And there's no doubt in my mind that Sophie is going to eat up that atmosphere.
100%.
Sophie isn't one of those players who's going to go out there and be like, these people don't like me. I can't play. Like, Sophie's –
She will relish the environment.
Yes, and she will egg that on, and she will ball because that's who Sophie is.
Yeah.
And I think that team is going to also kind of go as Sophie goes in that attitude. That's not. I agree with Peter. I don't think they win that game just because it's South Carolina. That's going to be a crazy place to play. But I don't think they're going to go down there and be flat, especially after the Georgia game.
I
don't think Robin lets that happen, and I don't think Sophie lets that happen.
I agree. I think that is a team that is built to respond to criticism, like you said, because that's kind of who Sophie is. Yeah. I 100%. That's a good point you made. I think she will go there and just love that environment where she is kind of public enemy number one.
I definitely could see her playing well, and I think she will play well, but I think one of the biggest things is that Asia Wilson is going to be on the floor a lot more than she was last game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be something that's tough for Missouri to deal with.
I think we talk a lot about the environment that they're going to play in. I think that maybe, you know, after getting a chance to talk to the team, and like you said, Cam, the way the team's made up, maybe we make it out to be a bigger deal than they do. That's probably true. I think it'll be unique. It'll be a unique environment. But at the same time, whether it has a impact on the game, we'll kind of wait and see. I think, like you said, Asia Wilson playing is going to be a huge impact on the game, bigger than the crowd. But I don't know. I think one thing that happened in that game and here at Mizzou a couple weeks ago, whatever Missouri did, however the way they played, the fact that Asia Wilson wasn't on the floor, I don't know, whatever, something happened in that game that broke South Carolina. The defending national champions in the third quarter and the fourth quarter were flat and had no answer for Missouri on the road. Maybe it's like I said, maybe it's the way they played. Maybe it was the fact that their best player wasn't on the floor, but that was Missouri's game. They controlled the game from pretty much start to finish. And so whatever happened there, you know, it's going to be difficult to replicate that formula on the road, but if they can do it, then to beat the defending national champions twice in the same season is going to look pretty darn good on a tournament resume.
Certainly.
Okay.
And if they can find a way to win or even keep it close against Mississippi State, that's a huge resume booster.
That's big. The good thing about playing in the SEC is you have a lot of opportunities against great teams.
I agree.
Okay.
Really quick.
Yeah.
And get to Chamel's last question for you.
Okay. All right. We'll go back. This is about the men's basketball team.
Yep. Chamel asks, this question is for Danny. Outside of Tillman, who does this team need to step up in the most? So that's a step up in the post.
Michael Porter, maybe.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if he'd. Let's talk about. Okay, so we'll talk about the people that are actually on the team right now that are playing. I think Cassius has done all that he can. You know, I think his 3-point shooting is what has led this team to success at the beginning of the year. And when I think about this team and what they do and what's different about them from last year, I mean, Jeremiah Tillman, with his foul trouble and the way he plays, he comes and goes. He can be dominant, but he's not the guy who's going to be there every night getting a ton of touches. Jonte Porter, same way, 18-year-old kid out there. He's had flashes. He's been really good. The biggest difference between last year's team that won 8 games and this year's team that we're talking about going to the NCAA tournament is Cassius Robertson and Jordan Barnett. So I think you look at Cassius Robertson, he's the guy. Like he is the force that's leading this team. He needs to be the guy that continues to lead it until the end.
I agree. Cassius is doing literally everything. I think he's doing everything he can. He's handling the ball, taking his shots when they come. I think his shots off a little bit. But I think we're right pretty much on the same page as Cassius. I think he has to be the guy to lead this team. And I think I imagine he's the voice in the locker room.
And the question is, who needs to step up? I don't think you can ask Cassius to do much more than he's doing, but I think when he's hitting shots and hitting threes, that's when Missouri's at its best.
I agree. I do, to Cassius' point though, I do think Jordan Barnett has to be more aggressive. I do think he has to find a way to make an impact on a game for 40 minutes.
Yeah, you can't have a Texas A&M situation where he says, I don't think my head was in the game.
Yeah, that can't happen anymore. Right. I think you see him in flashes to different points of the game, at different points of the year, but he has to be there for all 40 minutes if this team's going to be successful this season.
One more from Tramiel. I like this one. We can end on this one. This will be our last question.
All right, Peter, you got a question.
Oh, boy.
It says, this is all, yeah, as we said, also from Tramiel. For Peter, what is the ideal score that the gymnastics team would like to hit in each meet?
Ah, well, so you see the last week they were in the 196s, which is, I think, a very good spot for them. Their average is currently around 17th in the country, which is pretty good. That's what they finished ranked last year. And I think if they're in that 196 range, they're gonna be in good shape. You don't want to have what they were against Auburn when they were 194. So I think as long as they're around 196, that's what you want.
What point margin do you want to be around to win your fantasy gymnastics matchup?
To win my fantasy gymnastics matchup, I need to be in the 197s. 198.
It's competitive.
Oh, it's competitive world. It's tough. Yeah, I made some great draft picks. Fantasy gymnastics, you should check it out.
We should clarify, this is not a game that's played for money.
No.
A game that's played for money, but fantasy gymnastics. Sometime we'll have you do a story or kind of inform. Basically, can you give us a 5-second description of what we're talking about?
I mean, it's just like fantasy football. You just draft gymnasts and you set up your lineup, and then it's whoever plays best wins. And it was developed by an MIT grad who did gymnastics, and she pretty much runs it all. So that's something to check out.
There you go. Okay. Peter's our resident gymnastics expert, and going forward, he will be our resident expert on all things Mizzou Olympic sports. So make sure you tune in to him on Twitter and read his work. Also covered the Mizzou football team this year, so his name might ring a bell in that way. But for everything else, for Mizzou basketball, follow Cameron Teague Robinson on Twitter at @CJ_Teague, and me for, I don't know, whatever else you might have. Do we need to read this last comment? Tramiel, we will give you... Thank you for participating in what the guy wearing the glasses. What does Terrence Phillips need to do in order to get off the pine? Can you answer that quickly?
Well, one, you know my name. That's rude. Two, he just has to take control of the ball, play defense without fouling. That's pretty much it. Can't turn the ball over, can't foul on defense. It's just every time he gets on the floor, it seems like that happens.
That sounds easy.
Yeah, easy enough.
You say it like that?
Yeah. That sounds easy.
Jordan Geist, that's it.
Yeah. If Jordan Geist can do it,
yeah.
I mean, maybe we shouldn't say that. Yeah. That would kind of disrespect Jordan
really,
Geist.
Really good year. This year.
Yeah. But there you go. That's your answer.
That's what he has to do.
Fair enough.
We'll see if that happens or not.
Okay. Next week, we'll talk more about Mizzou basketball. Maybe we'll have some softball news. And I don't know. I think that's all that's going on right now. Try to have Peter back again for Olympic sports updates. Read all our work in the newspaper, or at ColumbiaTribune.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.
And subscribe to Mizzou's Sports Podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.